He's a World Cup winner, a test double centurion, and someone who's been part of the IPL since its very beginning in 2008. And he's seen the tournament wearing various hats, player, coach, and now ESPN Cricket Info expert, Brad Hodge. It's our pleasure to welcome you on Talking T20.
Pleasure to be here, actually. Yeah, I'm super excited to dive into some issues of T20 cricket, so it's pretty cool.
Lovely. We also have Gaurav Sundararaman, who's been part of IPL teams and think tanks in the past. Gaurav, welcome again. You're a Talking T20 regular.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I am Srinath Sripath, of course, and between the three of us, we have over 70 IPL caps. Hodgy, all of which gives us an ideal opportunity to talk about life on the IPL caravan. You've been on it for 8-10 years since 2008. Simple question to you to start off. Is the IPL the biggest T20 franchise tournament you've been part of during
your life? There is no doubt. Absolutely. I mean, I've played in a number of T20 leagues around the world. I think the only one I haven't played in is South Africa. So for me, look, I think the distinctive part about why IPL is good is that you have a distinctive window and all the best players are here consistently. I mean, not only are the Indian legends involved as well, you've got all the best players from around the globe and they're all in here in India fighting out for an IPL title. I think that's the one difference that, you know, Big Bash, as good as it is, we don't have our Australian players consistently in the competition. So if that can change, yeah, that'd be really good.
Gaurav, you've been part more of the auction side of things than during the tournament itself. You might have worked with teams in the past. Is that a feeling that franchises have, that they have the best set of talent to pick from among all the leagues that you've worked with? You've also worked with the CPL in the past. Do franchises have that sense that they've got access to the best or the deepest roster of players to pick from?
Definitely. It's a huge... they take it so much more seriously. The fact that IPL has the best players, they start planning more than 6-7 months. They invest money to send people to actually scout for the IPL. I don't think any other league in the world does that. So that shows the importance of this tournament and the availability. If you don't have any of your big stars playing, this IPL is never going to be that big. And the other important point is they don't allow the Indian players or the big players to actually play in other leagues. So that kind of elevates the IPL even more. At some point, if that changes, then it's going to be slightly on the harder side for IPL to continue having that reputation.
Hodgy, this... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's really important. That's a really important point that, you know, I think BCCI have done well actually to protect their little investment. And, you know, the players would want to play in other countries around the world, but to be fair, the money pool that's available in the IPL is not even close to anything around the world. So, for me, they've actually done quite a strategic investment in keeping the players just for IPL. Everyone wants to watch these guys. I mean, you know, even Australians, any person around the world wants to watch Rohit smack it around for Mumbai Indians, Virat Kohli smack it for the RCB. It's endless.
Okay, let's go back to 2008. Obviously, it wasn't as big as it is now. When you were picked by the Kolkata Knight Riders for the first season of the IPL, what was the feeling? Did it feel like, you know, something that's completely new to cricket, a big paycheck coming away, or was it more in the lines of, you know, this is a complete unknown to me, what am I going to do in India for 2 months?
Well, for me, the paycheck wasn't as such. I actually had a contract with Lancashire Cricket Club at the time, which was pretty fruitful back then. The Australian dollar to the pound was pretty good. And, you know, I'd played cricket for my country, so you generally get a better price tag. So for me, it was more opportunity. This was the one thing where everyone wanted to be. You know, this IPL thing had come around. You know, even in that dressing room, there was Andrew Flintoff. He was in that process. So for us, it was just the thing to be involved in. And when we got here, yeah, I think Modi put together an amazing package, actually. I mean, I've got to give credit where credit's due. He's not involved anymore. But the showpiece that he put together had some great brains trust. And then the rest is history. I mean, Brendan McCullum set the tournament alight with one of the best innings that we've ever seen, if not remember. And then that was it. I mean, Shah Rukh Khan was jumping around left, right and centre, all excited about this new tournament. And, yeah, it's changed a little bit. There's no doubt. I think the party atmosphere that comes with it is just sort of gone away, and it's a lot more closed house and professional. Not saying it wasn't professional back then.
It's a lot more serious cricket now.
Well, it was serious back then as well. The point was is that you enjoyed your fruits of your labour a lot more than you did now, actually. So, you know, that was part of it, the whole sort of Bollywood extravaganza that you play cricket, it's a real form of entertainment, and then you go and enjoy it a bit later on. So yeah, this was quality.
We've heard so much from other former players who've been here with ESPN Cricket Info and in general about how nothing prepares you for the pressure of playing in front of 50, 60,000 people. You obviously were an established international by that point. You played six different seasons. But does a big crowd and playing in grounds across India put extra pressure on younger players, maybe not for the established stars? Have you seen that or heard of that from players during your time?
Look, there's no doubt. Look, I never struggled with it myself. I always thought that I was just out there to entertain anyway. And I thought it was a great showpiece to actually put your skills, you know, to the rest of the world. I mean, how do you go up to a youngster and say you're going to play in front of a screaming crowd at Wankhede? You're playing for a franchise called Mumbai Indians. We're paying you a truckload of money, and you're paying for one of the richest companies in the world. Go and deal with that, young man. And then you actually got to go and get 12 and over. So good luck. There's no doubt that there would have been some sleepless nights. And the reality is that in any job around the world, you've actually got to live up to your paycheck. The higher you get paid, the more it's on the line. So sometimes it's better off to actually, when you're starting out, have a less of a paycheck. I know we all want money, but then build up. I mean, getting chucked into the deep end, it's great. You get to buy a new car and put an extra bedroom on your house, but pressure does weigh you down, there's no doubt.
Gaurav, we have all our stats and analysis and stuff we go, and you would have gone to the auction as well. A factor like this, which is a complete intangible, you're testing a player's temperament and his bottle in front of so many people. Did franchises think about that in auctions when they went for players? Was that a thought process that was in the minds of owners and think tanks?
So that's actually an uncontrollable. Like I always say, the price is not determined by the quality of the player. It's determined by the demand and supply in the auction. So sometimes you can't plan for that. But what you can technically do is identify the mental space of each player and then decide whether you want him in your setup or not. That is something which I feel a lot of teams are not doing even till date. There are certain players who are in certain positions in their life, whether they've achieved everything or they're yet to achieve, or they're in the fringes of a team. So in my team, I would pick a player like that who's in the fringes of a national call-up or just went to a national call-up.
Give us an example. Something.
Someone like, say, Mayank Agarwal this year, for example, if he was in the auction, or Vijay Shankar. I see that kind of confidence coming to them. Or some youngster who's 21, 22, who we all think has great potential. Whereas, rather than investing on a person who's slightly established but not very experienced also, somewhere in a middling where he's done that, been there, done that in the IPL a couple of years but not really taken IPL by storm, you know. So the fact is, it really depends on what each person brings to the table in terms of the mental aspect, which Haji says about playing in front of crowds. Yeah. That I don't think a majority of people would have played. Now that BBL and stuff is there, at least there's some kind of exposure for them because BBL draws up great crowds. So, but he'll know better in terms of how people actually cope up with the travel. I've heard so much about travel. These things are intangibles. Yeah. You can't really pick a player and say
it's what we don't see. I mean, from the outside, we watch them play, but I mean, we don't see you travel.
Yeah, as a coach, as an overseas player as well, I mean, it's demanding to be away from your family for a period of 10 weeks. And it takes its toll. And you go through real highs and lows, and you go through ups and downs. And that compounds onto your performance as well. So if you're in a good space and you're actually making runs, you know, those things sort of that go on back home without, you know, it doesn't hurt you that much. But when you're not scoring, and we had a player last year who, you know, unbeknown leading into the tournament, was in good touch, playing good cricket, and then he breaks up with his girlfriend midway through the tournament. All of a sudden, the runs go sour, and as a coach, you're trying to pick up the pieces.
Yep.
But the reality is that the home front's actually taking a lot of space in the human mind. So they're all the little dynamics that you can't get right before an auction. No matter how much theory, no matter how much numbers are crunched,
absolutely,
you can't see the future either.
Recently, in a chat with Cricinfo, Rahul Dravid was speaking about exact same things that you spoke about. It's about how a captain on the field has access to this sort of information and he knows it better. Because often we think, why is this guy not bowling? He's great at the death. He's good in the power play. But sometimes the captain on the field and the management as coaching staff, you have seen that these facts are available to you, which are not available to the outside world. That's a huge difference, isn't it?
Correct. And that's why, you know, as a captain or a coach, sometimes you can't take too much criticism to heart. Mm. You're in the insider sanctum. You know what's going on. You're trying to fix the problem. Mm. So it, basically in coaching and in batting itself, you're actually a problem solver. So someone bowls a delivery to you, you've actually got to decide what you're going to do with that ball. And you've got best part of 0.3 of a second to do so. It's no different than coaching, management. You're still trying to solve a problem, how to get the best out of the team, how to get the best out of an individual. And there's a lot of other factors you've got to take into it. So it's such a tough environment. It really is. And there's a lot of other factors that come into it as well. So it's such a great place to play cricket.
You've given completely honest answers so far, so I'll ask you a tougher question, which is that we see players do so much off-field media commitments and sponsorship commitments and other things which, you know, go viral on YouTube, so to speak, for those of us who are on social media. Do players really enjoy doing all of that because you're already on a really busy schedule over 8 weeks?
So the thing is, depends who it's for. If it's for the franchise, then probably the answer is a negative. If it's for yourself and your own personal, you know, salary or whatever, then the answer will be yes. And the reason is, as a sportsman, you're actually in your own little bubble, and you're so engrossed in what's important to you, is that often you forget what's important to everyone else. I mean, I often tried to explain to some of the players, and I was negligent of this myself, that the guy that gets your bags to and from the airport, into your room and then to the ground, is just as important as your performance out on the ground. If one of those little cogs doesn't work, the whole thing falls apart. So, yeah, going back to the question, what did I actually answer it, or did I just run around in circles?
You did answer it partly, that you enjoy it sometimes when it's for the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, as cricketers, you're actually, before you even get there, you're told your commitments of you're trying to promote the sponsors. I mean, the sponsors actually tip in a hell of a lot of money. Mm. And as cricket players, we think that that's not part of it. It actually pays your salary. So as youngsters, the funny thing is, the older you get, the smarter and the understandings you are of how the business operates. When you're a youngster, you really don't care. All you care about is whether the colour on your grip is the right colour, because that's going to get your runs. Whether your shoes are brand new, whether the right pair of shoes, these are more what's important. But as you get older, you understand more of the business side, so you're more attuned to what people want.
So what I wanted to just check with Hodgy is about, in terms of these sponsor commitments, media interactions, something which the younger players, guys who are in a domestic circuit, don't get to do much, obviously being part outside the setup. Mm. So do these players actually look forward to these 2 months? And like a guy like, say, Surya Kumar Yadav, for example, who spends 10 months with Bombay and playing the Ranji Trophy in domestic, suddenly has 2 months of so much attention. He might like the whole attention. Attention, right? Or am I seeing it wrong?
I think everyone likes the attention.
Okay.
There's no doubt that you come from all parts of the globe. Some are more high profile than others. Even the youngsters, even senior players, all around. I mean, the people from Bombay or Bangalore, Delhi, are a lot more well known, I guess, than players from Baroda or something like that. I guess more exposure. So, look, there's nothing satisfying than walking into this country and they know you're a good player and you're a cricket player. And for me, there's nothing more satisfying than the person that comes and makes up your room in the hotel, takes pride in what you've done as well. They buy into it. Mm. So for me, the IPL experience, the extravaganza, the lights, this is people's opportunities. I mean, we were just talking before about these reality TV shows. I mean, that's fake. This is true reality. This is someone coming from a young cricket player, making his way through the ranks and getting an opportunity in IPL. I mean, there's only so many players that can play for their country. IPL, you're a showpiece around 8 franchises, so everyone wants to be a star. There's no doubt about that.
Hodgy, it seemed a lot of fun back in 2009. I think we were talking about it earlier as well, when there was this fake IPL player turned around. There was a blog post today. He even released a book. And coincidentally, the book cover happened to be with a KKR helmet on it, if I remember right. A lot of us suspected, the rumors were that the player was from within KKR.
Yeah.
Is reality anywhere close to as entertaining as that?
Look, we were We were trying to, actually, it was funny, because we were trying to work out who it was, because there was a lot of inside information that was coming. I mean, let's be brutally honest. Facts. KKR, at that time, were an absolute rebel. John Buchanan came in, he got rid of Dada.
And he had 11 captains.
And the whole thing turned to an absolute pile of rubbish. There were some true facts that were actually being leaked. Right. So we have to understand that it had to get to this person somehow. We were trying to work out who it was. It was clearly none of the overseas players, because what was said was it couldn't make any sense. So we thought, oh, could it be Karthik? Could it be this person? Could it be that? We're trying to work out who it was.
Akash as well was part of the
We had no idea. Yeah. But what it was, it brought a hell of a lot of entertainment to the KKR, who were getting absolutely thumped most days. So for us, it was entertaining, for sure.
Interesting. You've obviously played for different franchises over the years. The question first to Gaurav and then coming to Hodgie. Dravid also recently spoke about how he picked Hodgie in the auction in 2012 as a specialist death over finisher. And Hodgie wanted to bat at number three was the word. When did teams start picking players for specific roles? Because back in the 2008 auction, it was all new. It was all like fantasy cricket, dream 11s coming together. When did teams start, according to you, pick players specifically for roles? Then we'll ask Hodgie if it's actually true.
So I've been working in this space since 2012. And that time it was not as much as role specific. It's evolved. I think now it's got a lot more scientific and a lot more
data
tactical
heavy,
and
analytics.
All teams are doing that. So you can see the way the IPL has actually evolved. Now it's so much more equal. All teams are pretty much equal. We saw last year being the closest ever IPL with almost the last day. You still had five teams in the reckoning. So that shows that teams have all done their homework. But in terms of roles, I think it is more team specific, more franchise specific. About there are 3-4 franchises who actually have been doing this for quite some time. They have a process. Teams, franchises like KKR, Mumbai, Rajasthan, Sunrisers. These 4 franchises have been properly following a certain process over the last 5 years. Teams like Chennai sometimes go by what their captain says. RCB go by what their captain says. So it varies. But definitely it's gotten a lot better. And now it's only going to get even more better from this new tactics, it's sometimes nowadays becoming predictable. Now, this year, something strange is what I have seen is the matchups are not working. From whatever they have analyzed in the first 11 games, the matchups which traditionally work are not working. So that means obviously teams are working on it. So teams know about it. So what is the next big innovation? How do teams actually tackle this? Maybe it's not matchups anymore, it's something else. So those are things which I'm interested in doing, and that's what I also keep researching on.
Hodgie, death overs finisher, you were not a fan initially, was it? That's what Dravid said.
Yeah, I mean, I actually heard it on the ESPN Cricket Info launch of Smart Stats, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I saw it. And yeah, 100% agreed. I was really interested when Rahul brought me in. And you know, I sort of said to him, well, look, I've made all my runs in the top order. And yeah, what he said on that interview was spot on. He said, well, look, you actually one of the best Australian players of fast bowling that I've seen. And then the way the IPL rocks is that the last 4 overs, it was 24 balls, are of the best quicks you have in your comp or in your side. So he said, if you get access to those 24 balls, he said, there's no one else in our team that actually can deal with it. He said, you're the only one that can actually deal with it. So yeah, I think, look, I always got him. I think the thing for success for me was that I actually had 100% faith in Rahul and his vision. And there's also a huge amount of respect for me to go, well, you're coach and manager. Yeah, I'm in, 100% in. So I've tried a few times to do that. There's a lot of players who don't receive that too well. I was one that did receive it too well. So I was very much in terms of, well, it's 11 players. If you can do your role and do it successfully, then the team's more chance of winning.
Did you actually train for that? Like, did you actually have your net sessions just to play fast bowling and try to hit them out of the park? Or was it more traditional and maybe nowadays people do stuff like that?
So I structured it the way I changed my method about feeling good about it being in the nets. So I knew that statistically batting at 6, you only face maximum 15 balls. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gaurav.
It's much lower.
It's something like that. It might be 12.
Yeah,
12 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, what's the point of feeling good about batting the nets for 50 minutes and facing 150 balls? The only thing good is it strokes your ego a little bit. You're hitting the ball in the middle, you feel good about yourself. But when you've actually only got 12 balls to face in a game, nothing feels good. There is nothing at all that presents you with something where you launch walk out and you feel good. You've got no time to work yourself into the contest. So for me, I actually wanted to feel uncomfortable. So in the nets, I actually only train 20 balls and I walk out, start practicing some range hitting. And the other thing was I'd probably go in and work on what I was going to do to face spin in the 15th over. Because I knew more than likely, being an overseas player, they were going to throw a spin at me. So how was I going to combat that and not get out before those death overs and which Rahul wanted me to cash in on? So that was an important part of my training, to walk in and I'd bat against Tumbay for probably 10 balls and walk out. So that was an interesting thing, how we went about it. And actually trained with Praveen Tumbay, and we worked out that, boss, I'm going to face two balls of you and I'm going to try and hit you for six every ball. And he'd actually then, we'd actually have a little contest. And then he worked out how to bowl to someone that was actually coming at him. So it was actually quite a little in-house contest between both of us that improved both our games. So, yeah, for me, there was no point working on my cover drive. To me, I had 12 balls. Elegance wasn't part of it. It was just getting the ball outside of the stadium. So that was, I did train for it, yes.
And talking of Tumbay and, by extension, domestic Indian players, you've seen it as both a player and a coach. Do these guys walk up to you more if you're a fellow teammate of theirs, or do they walk up to you more often if you're a coach? What do they feel more like comfortable with?
Both. Look, I think I'm quite an approachable person to talk about batting. I love talking about batting. So even when I was a player and then I moved to coaching Gujarat Lions, I think the one thing was is there was a huge amount of respect from the playing group already to know that what you'd achieved in your cricket life. So that was really important. And then that move to the Kings 11 Punjab, where I was trying to work with Mayank Agarwal, trying to get the best out of Karun Nair, just couldn't quite do it. Well, I'm not saying I failed. I'm saying that they couldn't then put it onto the park. That's good fun. That's real coaching. Trying to get the best out of someone when they're a fraction down or not getting the best out of themselves. So for me, that's real. And those players in particular had great faith in me trying to get the best out of them as well. So the partnership was really, really cool. I'll talk batting with anyone. Anyone that's in the top five or top six or seven, let's talk about batting. I've batted in every position possible. Yes. So there's one thing that you can never replace, and that's walking out and marking centre. And whether you're facing Dale Steyn or Harbhajan Singh in your first over, or coming down the back end and the reverse. So I've felt what it's like to be in that position in both times. So there's a lot of respect from the playing group.
Sometimes do you feel that as a coach, you're talking more in the last 3-4 years, is it similar to football in that there's only 14 games to prove yourself and the rope is a little too short for a coach to prove yourself really quickly within a very short span of time?
Look, it's pretty cutthroat here, actually. I mean, I sort of said to the Kings 11 Punjab, you know, how do you define success? And I said, what do you actually want to do? You haven't won in 10 years. So if I'm not to win next year, how am I defined? I mean, you know, I mean, you really...
Did we get closer than the last 10 years?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, they might win it this year. And good luck to them as well. But maybe the process was put in place there from myself and Virinder Sehwag, whatever. I mean, there was a number of factors why we didn't win. We moved to indoor. And that hurt our championship big style. But so I sort of said to them, well, how many times do you want to win in a decade? And I thought that 3 is realistic. You know, 3 is a good result. And I said, it doesn't matter whether you win this year, next year, or the year after. You could win 3 in a row in the mid pack. Just that if you've won 3 in a decade, if you look at CSK, they've won 3. They'll go Mumbai Indians, they'll go successful 10 years.
True.
So, for me, it's pretty brutal in this part of the world.
Is it more cutthroat than other leagues?
Yeah, for sure. If you don't make the finals, pretty much you pack your bags and walk out the door.
But I would expect that, considering the amount of money that is put in, the amount of investment that is being done, and what is at stake? You know, a lot of people get national calls, a lot of... you get elevated to a completely new status. If you ask any player or coach, they would say how important these 2 months are for their lives. So, yes, with great responsibility. Power comes great, more responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's that's fine. You're happy to live on the edge and back your ability and back the ability of your players as well. I mean, as a coach, your success is bound by not yourself, but actually what your playing group do. So the hard thing is the player sitting there watching, sometimes it go pear-shaped. Mm. And you want to get out there and sometimes strap the pads on and get out there and do it yourself. But the reality is that you're actually there to educate others to do it the best way they possibly can.
Okay. We'll move on to a couple of quick questions, quick segments with Haji before we wrap up this episode of Talking to You, really. Firstly, as a player or a coach between among Indian players and overseas players, what's the funniest thing that you've said or you've heard somebody say in a team huddle or a dressing room meeting? Could be English, Hindi, anything that's good to go on air.
One of the funniest things I ever heard was myself and David Hussey together sitting in a team meeting with Kolkata Knight Riders, and Shah Rukh Khan came in and delivered this pump-up type speech. But it was in Hindi, so it went for 40 minutes, this speech, and we just sat there looking at each other, trying to work out what exactly he was saying.
The first season?
Yeah, second season, maybe. No, first season, I think. What, first season? And we just sort of got up, and Shah Rukh Khan come past us, and he said, "Good luck today, boys. Did you get that?" And we just went, "Yep, we got that. Understood." I mean, it was a pretty simple message. As soon as you know that Shah Rukh Khan walks into a team meeting, you don't even have to speak. The message was pretty clear. Get out there and do a job for us today, boys. So.
Roger that, Chief. Perfect. Talking of things that are a little alien to you as a cricketer in India, we've got a few stadium names lined up for you, stadiums where you've batted.
Okay.
Not the most famous ones. I'm not going to ask you about Wankhede and West.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you six or seven. You've kind of cracked the face-off quiz and won it pretty much every day so far on Facebook. So we'll make things a little tougher on the podcast. Yeah. I give you the name of the stadium and you name the city.
Okay, cool.
Gaurav, I'm assuming, will get most of these.
Yeah, so for sure.
Let's start with Sardar Patel Stadium.
Is that Dr. Patel Stadium?
No,
that's coming later.
Ah, well, that one's in Mumbai, just down the road.
That's one.
Swar Patel Stadium.
You might have played a few home games.
And I should assume that I've played.
Yeah, you've played at all these stadiums.
The surname could help you.
Yeah, thinking Patel. It's not indoor, is it?
No.
I've put that, have you that played, stadium out of my
mind.
Have
you played home games in Ahmedabad? You have?
Yes, I have. Royals? Correct. But the thing is there's a new stadium there now, so you're probably throwing me off. <something. laughs>
Okay, the IS Bindra Stadium. That should be easy.
IS Bindra. Oh, you've stumped me here. This one's got to be down south for sure.
It's actually a googly.
This is probably the stadium where you've coached the most, if that helps.
Really? Is it...
Technically not.
Is it...
it's close to your heart, though.
Yeah.
Is it Mohali?
Mohali is right. We've got a number of these, but the Nehru Stadium where you've batted. The only Nehru Stadium in India where you've batted. We've got quite a few in India.
Nehru Stadium.
No idea. Give me a hint.
Orange jersey, was it? No.
Kerala.
Yeah, perfect.
There you go.
Got it.
Do you remember the team name?
Yeah, Kochi Tuskers Kerala. Yeah.
Bingo, perfect.
In fact, I'll put it out there on the podcast. I'm still owed some money. So if anyone from the BC Show is listening, we'd love to find the rest of the cash from Kochi Tuskers Kerala.
We'll pass it on.
Thank you.
The last one is Rajiv Gandhi Stadium.
Rajiv Gandhi Stadium, that's a simple one. That is, oh my God, it's just slipping my mind.
I think
Gandhi Stadium, it just played there the other day.
Yeah, I think you have an IPL 50 there, if I'm not wrong.
Rajiv Gandhi Stadium.
Down south?
Yeah. It was just, that's in Bangalore.
Chinnaswamy is
in
Bangalore.
Oh, okay. Rajiv Gandhi...
is in Hyderabad.
That's
the one city that we've missed out on. Haji, you've got pretty much half of it, slightly better than half of it. That's great for an overseas player.
I'm not one to remember the names of stadiums. Remember the pitches.
The only reason we asked this and we got you to answer these is because you've cracked all the easier ones on the quiz show. Oh. And there's no competitor here, so you win this round.
Good.
Right. Final segment. You've picked yours in the past. We've had other experts do it. Your all-time IPL 11. Familiar, I think you'd have done it quite a few times already.
All-time IPL 11. Wow, you put me on the spot.
No,
there.
Let's make it easy for you.
No, I'll start with Gale and Rohit Sharma opened in the batting. Virat Kohli, ABD, number five. Need a number five.
You get yourself in?
Nah, I don't make it, unfortunately.
MSD.
Number five, MSD. Number six, Dre Russ.
Nice.
Number seven, probably all around.
Bravo.
Maybe even
the bowling attack.
Wayne Bravo.
Yeah, Bravo.
Bravo, maybe bowling. To have Mitchell Starc in there, his record is pretty good, even though he doesn't show up too often. Lassif Malinga, Rashid Khan, and
Bumrah.
Is that 11?
Pretty much. We waved off the four overseas player quota.
Oh, field, okay. So. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah,
I can do that.
Five,
so who have we got? We got five or six, haven't we?
We've got six. We've got McCullum, Gale, Bravo.
No McCullum.
I picked Rohit Sharma.
Rohit Sharma.
To open the batting.
Russell, Gale. Bravo,
Gale,
Starks,
Rashid
Khan. We've got six. We need two Indians.
Is it Suresh Raina. Oh,
nice.
Perfect.
Suresh Raina.
Suresh Raina goes in. So we've still got five, that's fine. We've got five overseas players. That's quite an
I'll get rid of one. Who else should I get out of?
Russell or Bravo? You pick both?
Let's get rid of Bravo then. Let's pick Dre Russ and I'll find another number five batter. Push Dre Russ deeper. This is a tough one, actually, just off
go the...
He's picked the spot where there are hardly any Indians in the all-rounders.
Maybe let's just go in 2008-2009, I'll pick Yusuf Pathan.
Maybe till 2012-13.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Five, 6 years.
Let's wipe the last couple out.
Yeah, that's a formidable 11 Aussies picked. And that's about all we have time for in this fun, special episode of Talking T20 with Brad Hodge. Thank you very much, Hodge, for your time.
It was a pleasure. Good fun.
We're putting you through the treadmill and you're making your work non-stop here at ESPN Cricket. For Gaurav, thanks always for joining us.
Thank you.
And remember, thanks to you, listener, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes or anywhere else you get your podcast from. And until next time, thank you and see you from all of us at ESPN Cricket.